course, now the dog is walking around with her little nails. She's going to get some water.
Got a flap.
Oh, she literally just walked into flap and then locked away.
And then left. Yep. Just wanted to make sure the mic picked that up.
Yep.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Two White Girls Talk Bollywood. I'm Kim.
And I'm Katie. And we're here to talk about no singing.
No.
No dancing. And Bollywood girls.
Bollywood girls who are superheroes.
Literally superheroes. And, like, maybe slightly unhinged, but all in the service of saving her brother.
Right. So it's justified. Because...
Exactly.
Because big sisters are the kind of people who will do whatever they need to do for the ones they love.
Yeah, I'm going to be honest. I love my sister very much, and she loves me. And I don't think she'd go to these lengths to save me from execution in a foreign country,
fair. You know, I was trying to think that, too, about my sister, and I do feel like she would probably stop short at, like, killing everyone.
Yeah.
Like, I do think she might start to think about breaking me out of prison, but I think she'd quickly hit a wall and she wouldn't go any further. She has children of her own that she needs to, like, be around for.
You know, at some point, life goes on.
Yeah.
But that's not what happens in Jigra.
No, yes. Welcome to Jigra. And I was going to say, and we'll talk about this more at the end, but there is some singing.
You're right. Yes.
But, what did you think of Jigra?
I didn't dislike it.
Okay, yeah, good.
I think I did myself a disservice. Mm. I think I watched it in too many small sittings. Which normally I don't mind, but I think sometimes then it tricks my brain into feeling like it's longer than it actually is.
Mm-hmm.
So there was nothing about it that I was like, ooh, I don't like this. It was just like by the fourth sitting, I was like, oh man, we're still watching this, huh? So that's not the movie's fault.
Yeah.
I'm owning that. I did think it was entertaining. It was like an entertaining action flick. I think that Alia Bhatt was
amazing.
Incredible.
So she's, good.
You believe she can just turn her emotions off and become like a cold-blooded killer in the name of her brother. So kudos to her for her range, because we've seen her play like the sweet, bubbly, romantic lead, and we've seen her play this. she's great. I also just... I don't know. There were periods of time where I'm like, what's the point of this movie?
Yeah. So it's interesting that you had that experience with watching it in chunks, because this was another week for me where, like, I got to the halfway point and I was like, I'm going to keep watching because I'm really into this.
And I was really into it the first. Yes.
But it goes so far off the rails.
Yeah.
And I was really into it when there was, like, this intrigue and there was this, like, these emotional conflicts. And then the last, like, third is just, who do we have to kill next to get what we want to get? And this wasn't what it was building up to this point. And I don't find this as interesting.
Yeah, I feel like it lost the plot a little bit. I also... We'll say, and we'll talk about it more as we get into the plot, but, like, I was kind of excited by the idea of this guard, Landa, in the prison, and, like, the whole thing that Ankur reaches out to him at first, because he's like, oh, are you Indian? Because he's like, maybe, you know, you can be an emotional support in this terrible place. And then it was just like, no, Landa's just, like, a villain?
Yeah.
And I was just like, what is his motivation at this point? Like, I thought we'd see a redemption. And I'm getting ahead of myself, but, like, you're right. They laid out all these potential complexities that would have been really interesting to see and then didn't have any of it happen.
Yep.
And also they framed it as, like, a heist film, but then they just, like, literally barreled through everything and blew it up. And that was...
You know, I like a movie where people have to be, like, smart and calculating. And certainly there was some of that. But it was just ultimately, like, let's just blow it all up.
Yeah. I think the acting was great.
The acting was great. Speaking of great performances, our cast.
So yes, Jigra was written and directed by Vasan Bala, and it stars Alia Bhatt as Satya, Vidhan Raina as Ankur, Vivek Gomber as Landa, and then Manoj Pawa as Bhatia, and then Rahul Ravindran as Mutu. And also...
And not Sikandar Kaur as any sort of significant character he should be talked about.
Yeah.
It's just stupid that IMDb lists these people in this way.
I know. Because it must be... But it's not an order of appearance because...
No. It's like it's like a cameo. And that's what bothers me about this is like, why doesn't IMDb say Sikandar Kaur cameo?
Yeah.
Like, why does it just say Sikandar Kaur is here? Because he's really
that's
not.
Stupid.
But did you look at Vedang Raina's cat? Did you look at his previous credits?
Well, I know that he's from the Archies.
Yeah. I think that's the only other thing he's been in.
Yeah, because I did recognize him. I don't really feel like... This wasn't about... It's so weird. As much as this movie was about Ankur, it had nothing to do with Ankur. Like...
Yeah. I wasn't expecting him to have as much of a role as he did.
Yeah.
And I didn't hate that he had as much of a role as he did. I think that my issue with it comes more into play with, like, the entire way that they did kind of the ending of the movie. Again, the, like, last third that's just all breaking into the prison.
Yeah.
I didn't hate that we got more, like, kind of emotional depth from him because I thought he gave a great performance. At first, I was like, why are we seeing so much from Ankur in prison? Like, some of it, I understand we're trying to establish that it's this horrible... It's not a good experience for him, obviously. He's in prison. But, like... I understand we're doing that, but, like, why are we seeing these interactions with these other prisoners? Why is that important to me? And then and again, I don't want to say too much about this in this moment, but the whole, like, second we're escaping prison arc kind of came up, and I was like, oh, that's interesting.
Yes.
We have conflicting plot lines. That's really interesting.
That
but
is
then
true.
That turned out to be kind of a bit huge nothing burger.
Yeah.
And so... I was like, and then I went back to like, okay, but so then why? Why was this all the way that it was?
Yeah.
But I did just want to say it made me really happy that Vedang Raina was in this because we both, and Carly, we all praised his performance as, what's his name?
I think Reggie. Reggie was
the best part. Ricky? But yes, he was great in The Archies and one of few non-Nepo babies in the film The Archies. So I was excited that of all of them, he's like the next one that I was seeing in a movie.
Yeah, and with Alia Bhatt.
Yeah,
who's
so
the
like
it girl right now. So
she really is. And so I hope that this is a good, you know, a good further launching point of his career. But yeah.
Great. Okay.
Okay.
So we open on two children coming home from school, walking up the steps of their apartment building. And the children open the door to their apartment just in time to see their father hanging off the balcony railing. He apologizes to the girl, Satya, and then lets go.
Bleak place to kick things off.
Yeah, yeah. I also just, I wouldn't have minded a conversation between Satya and Ankur as, like, adults, kind of, about, like, the trauma of their father, you know, doing that. Maybe that didn't need to happen, but I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the things that's so, like, compelling and frightening about Satya's character is that she clearly, like, hasn't fully grappled with the trauma that she has experienced.
That is true.
But it could have been a different and maybe better movie if there had been more exploration of that.
Yeah. Even at like,
but it would have been not as much an action movie.
That is so true. It's like, well-adjusted people don't end up in action movies. Well-adjusted people who have been through therapy and process their trauma don't...
They're not getting into a lot of action in that regard.
They're not breaking into prisons. Yeah.
No, they're really not. Yeah, no, they're just kind of sitting home processing and having a nice time with their friends and themselves. Yeah.
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 Anyway, we then see an adult Satya in the middle of a bunch of wedding preparations being put on by the family she works for. So Satya reassures the head of the family, whom I'm just calling Uncle, that everything's been taken care of, and he asks her where her brother Ankur is, because after all, he's family.
Mm-hmm.
Satya can't find Ankur at the wedding, so she goes to his room, only to find him working away on his computer, because he's a software developer. One of Ankur's friends, Kabir, who is another son of this family, invites Ankur to a party that he's throwing, but Satya tells Ankur he can't go. Because she's, like, not a fan of Kabir. She doesn't want them hanging out.
Yeah.
Ankur gets mad that she's treating him like a kid, so she's like, okay, we'll play basketball for it. And there's this cute scene where they play together, and it's clear these siblings love each other very much, and, like, yada, yada, yada. But Satya ends up winning, and Ankur's upset all over again that he can't go to his friend's party, so he kind of, like, storms away. Big little brother energy.
I wished that the relationship between all these people had been a little better established, yeah, because it seems like this is, like, the family who raised them after their father's death.
Right.
So probably is, like, related to them, but I didn't really understand, like, how and why, yeah, Satya, like, also seems to be employed by them. Like, there's something there that I would have liked maybe just some two clarity. More sentences of dialogue about it.
Yeah, because at first I thought that they were genuinely, like, their uncle and, like, their cousins.
I'm pretty sure they are.
But then that's weird that she's, like, employed by them.
Yeah, exactly.
And then
exactly,
I thought the whole thing was that they're like, oh, we're family. And the whole thing is that, but when it comes down to it, they're not actually family, but also, are they?
Right, that's because I had the opposite where I was like, okay, so she works for them, but they kind of treat her like family. But then I was like, wait, but are they actually related?
I don't know.
That they are, but it's just like you're the poor relations,
right?
So like, why would we? Yeah, but again, like, I think the fact that neither of us is confident in our answers just goes to show
something
a little
was
better
missing.
Uh-huh. Development of that would have been appreciated.
Yeah. So the next morning, Kabir barges into Ankur's room and tells him to get ready because he told his dad that Ankur is going to put on a presentation. Kabir wants to go into business with Ankur to promote the software that Ankur's been developing, and Uncle agrees to invest. So Kabir's really excited, and he calls Ankur brother, which is another thing, because if it were his cousin, why would he be calling him brother? Unless he's like a brother, which I guess he could still be like a brother.
We've seen brother cousins plenty.
That's true. Yeah, that's true. Ankur is excited too. Satya seems like a little subdued about this. She's a little apprehensive. Yeah. Uncle tells her to book a charter flight for Kabir and Ankur so that they can go to an international business meeting in a country called Hanshi Dao, and Satya emotionally hugs Ankur goodbye. She, I think, has never probably been away from him for an extended period of time.
That's probably true, very
protective of him.
Yeah.
Then there's a fun montage where Kabir and Ankur are running around exploring Hanshi Dao and doing business things. But then, at a party, rich boy Kabir buys some drugs, and as he's driving them back to their hotel, he tries to drag race a pretty lady.
Yeah.
Why?
Never a good idea.
No. They get pulled over by the police for speeding, and then the cops discover the drugs in Kabir's pocket. So the boys get arrested and brought to the police station. A lawyer gets in touch with Uncle and says Hanshi Dao is extremely strict with its drug policy. He says it's death, and he can try to save one of them. This is, wild. Ankur is able to use the station phone to call Satya, and she tells him that since he didn't do drugs, his blood will come back clean and he'll be okay. Then Kabir's mother takes the phone to ask Ankur how Kabir is, which is like, lady, back off.
Like, yeah, let these people have their conversation.
Yeah.
Like, it's not about you.
Saying that Ankur was supposed to take care of him. No. Whatever.
Your son's a grown man. He should be able to take care of himself.
Yeah, but clearly he can't. Uncle then takes the phone, telling Ankur to do whatever the lady says. Oh my God.
Good general advice. Yeah.
Uncle then takes the phone, telling Ankur to do whatever the lawyer says. Flash to the lawyer asking Kabir if he wants to go home. Kabir says, of course, so the lawyer tells him he needs to tell the officers that the drugs belong to Ankur, and Ankur panicked and shoved them in Kabir's pocket. Mm-hmm. Classic. Kabir pushes back at first, saying that Ankur has nothing to do with the drugs, and he can't do that to the guy he considers his brother. But the lawyer explains that the penalty of drug possession in this country is death, and that's enough to convince Kabir to pin it all on Ankur. Own your own stuff, sir.
Yeah, to Kabir's credit, he pushes back a tiny bit.
Yeah, that's true.
Just a little bit. He doesn't deserve any credit.
It's like, how do you live with yourself after that?
Yeah, I feel like this lawyer, like, really, he couldn't have, like, actually gotten... Like, you didn't get anybody off. Yeah. Like, you just... You still had, like, one person committed a crime and one person still went to jail. Like, you didn't do anything.
That is so true. Also,
you just, yeah.
They're really rich. You really couldn't give, like, a pretty hefty bribe.
Right? Yeah. Like, this fake country doesn't seem like the most, you know, up and up of places. Like, no. I feel like you could just, you know, slip a few rupees under the table. But
yeah,
whatever.
I guess not. So Kabir is freed by the cops, and the lawyer goes to talk to Ankur. He walks in and very casually and lightheartedly says that Kabir has two drug-related charges against him back in India, and a third one would be bad for him and could lead to the death penalty. So hey, Ankur, don't worry. You just need to say these drugs belong to you, not Kabir. We'll prove it was a small amount, and you'll be back home in a few months. He does not mention the death penalty at all. Ankur is then pulled into a room with two cops who tell him that he needs to say, yes, I agree, to a statement that he is a drug trafficker, which is just a bonkers thing with, like, one little packet of drugs.
Yeah. Like, you can't know.
Yeah. And the lawyer then calls Uncle and tells him that Kabir is fine, but he's sorry about Ankur. There was no other way. Uncle just says, okay.
Again, it really just feels like the lawyer was being lazy. Like, couldn't Kabir have, like, said where he got the drugs from? And, yeah. Like, you know.
Couldn't you have negotiated a deal?
Yeah.
Ankur then has his trial where the judge asks him one more time if he agrees with his statement of being a trafficker. Ankur says yes, and I feel for him in this moment because he's lying, obviously, but he's like, head down, I'm going to do what the lawyer told me to. He's not happy about it, but he's doing it.
And he's also not fully hearing. Like, there are some things that are being fully translated into English. And then others that aren't. And there are a lot of things that aren't. And he's just like, okay, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the judge then sentences him to death by electrocution in 3 months.
Yeah.
This is the first time that Ankur has heard about the death penalty, so he understandably starts panicking, yelling, "It's not me," as he's dragged from the courtroom.
Mm-hmm.
So Satya hears about this and immediately goes to the airport to take the same jet that Kabir and the lawyer are coming back on so that she can go to Hanshi Dao herself. The worst part of this is that Kabir runs to her and hugs her, crying, saying he's sorry. And I just love she does not react.
Nope.
It's like, no, you let this happen. How sorry can you really be?
Yeah.
The lawyer says they tried everything, and she rightfully doesn't believe him. And I do love in this moment that, like, she kind of, like, makes a sudden movement toward him, and it makes him jump back.
Mm-hmm.
It's so satisfying.
I bet that felt good in just a small, small, tiny way in this moment.
Uh-huh, for sure. And like a total badass, she sets Uncle's office on fire before she goes.
Yeah, now... Let's talk about this just briefly.
She's an arsonist.
She's an arsonist. But so this, to me, like, this is the most interesting part of this movie.
Yeah.
Is the way that these people betrayed her and her brother. And these are the real villains of the movie.
Mm-hmm. And they don't really, it doesn't really come back to them at all.
No. All we get is this brief mention that, like, and clearly we can intuit that she, like, started this fire at their office. And
right.
I'm not saying that I wish the movie had been her, like, getting him out of prison and then, like, going and taking revenge on this family, but, like...
Some sort
of... I don't know. I just wish that that had been what the story was, because that is what's most interesting to me.
I agree. I really expected it to come back in some mm-hmm. sort of way. Like, yeah. even just for her to, like, walk in a power suit and, like, just, you know, have some sort of quip or something. Or, like, yeah.
Yeah. Or something. Even just more about, like was, like, their family was destroyed because of this fire. Like, not, yeah. like, killed, but, like, you know, their right. all their just wealth their was gone. Like,
yeah. No. That's just, like, a loose thread.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A really big, like, humongous floppy loose yeah. thread just waving in the breeze.
Yeah. If you pull on it, the whole story's gonna unravel.
It's just, woo!
Meanwhile, Ankur gets transferred to a prison on an island, and as he goes through the entry process, he tries to plead his case to an officer who appears to be Indian, but that officer says he doesn't understand Hindi, and he ignores him. This guy's name is Landa. He shows yeah. up a lot. So, yeah. Once Satya lands in Hanshi Dao, she goes immediately to the prison. As she waits to see Ankur, she remembers seeing her father's body get loaded into the ambulance. So she's, yeah, just getting flashes of trauma and, like, this fear of being left totally alone by the people she loves yeah. most, which I do understand.
This whole sequence is, like, one of the best parts of the movie.
Yeah, and I don't talk about the specifics, but I do love, like, it's time for her to go in and see Ankur, and she, before she heads in, she asks the guard if she looks sad.
Mm-hmm.
And she's clearly trying not to look sad, and he's like, yeah. And so then she's, like, tries to make herself happy and is like, okay, what about now? And he was like, no, you're still...
It's even worse.
Yeah, you still yeah. look sad. Because I like that it happens later.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, do I look sad? And he's like, no, because she has a plan.
She has
at
a
that
plan,
point.
Yeah.
Yeah, these little moments were... That was nice.
Yeah, and then did you think about the fact that that guy probably died?
Yeah, I did, actually. And I liked yeah. that guy. Like,
I know! He seemed like a nice guy!
A lot of these guards aren't part
bad
of
people.
The system. Right.
Yeah.
Like, they're just doing their job to put food on their table, and...
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that's yep. rough. Anyway.
Sorry.
In this meeting, Ankur starts crying, and he tells Satya he only has 3 months to live, but she tells him that she'll never let any harm come to him.
I really like in the middle of this, like, this whole thing is happening. There's, like, a buildup of, like, this very sweet, like, you know, brother-sister mm-hmm. song, like, affectionate song. And then, like, as Ankur is crying, she hits the glass to, like,
yeah.
kind of, like, jolt him out back. Of it and, like, yep. listen to me. And the music stops.
Yes, yeah.
And then it comes back in after. But I was like, that was just so well done. Like, it gave me chill. Like, just, yeah. This whole thing was...
I agree.
I was so here for this movie throughout everything up to this point and past it. But, like, yeah.
Yeah, it seemed very promising. And then it was almost like, yeah, they got, like, 80% of the way through the writing. And then they were just like,
And let's blow some stuff up.
Yeah. Then...
yeah. Yeah.
We then get a speech, I think from Landa, telling the prisoners on death row that their families may be rushing around trying to delay the inevitable, but it's a waste of time. And this is over a montage of Satya visiting different lawyers, trying to seek out help for Ankur, only for one lawyer to tell her that all she can do is appeal for a delay of sentencing to give Ankur a few more months in a, quote, good prison.
Mm-hmm.
They're like, yeah, the food's good. They have access to a lot of fun things. Like,
I mean, it does actually, because like they and yeah. they talk about like counseling and rehabilitation.
Right.
What not? I mean, obviously not for the people on death row, but like,
right?
I was sort of like, I mean, that sounds like a good yeah. prison system.
It's so
it doesn't
interesting.
Sound terrible.
In some ways, yeah, it's like so advanced and progressive.
Yeah.
And then in other ways, it's like. You're on death row for one little baggie of, like,
a
cocaine?
Tiny, yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Okay.
I don't think you should die for that.
Like, yeah.
I don't think, yeah. I don't believe in the death penalty for anybody.
I don't either.
Obviously not that.
Yeah.
But anyway.
One day during rec time, another prisoner tries to fight Ankur. Landa stops it and orders that the other prisoner be given 10 lashes. As that prisoner gets dragged away, Ankur yells that those aren't the rules, because Landa's like all about the like rule book mm-hmm. and code of conduct. And Ankur took that seriously. He read it. And he's like, yeah, man, prisoners may only get lashes if they first ignore three verbal warnings. So Landa's like, you're right. So, okay, fine. We won't do that. Mm-hmm. And so the other guy gets saved from his lashes and he tells Ankur that he owes him.
Yep.
Meanwhile, as Satya is meeting with various people around the city, she's seeing more and more evidence of a growing revolution, which I also thought that would factor in slightly more. Like, I kind of thought it was going to maybe be like a boggy system. Like, I don't know, where they'd help just topple the existing government. I don't know what I thought.
I agree with you. Like,
why are we... We're so focused on this whole revolution thing.
Right. Yeah. I didn't mean to giggle as if that were a bad suggestion. I was just giggling about Boggy. But, like, yeah. I agree. It didn't come back in a way that seemed actually meaningful or, like, why did we even have this in here?
Yeah, no.
Yeah.
Satya ends up meeting a guy named Bhatia, whose son is also on death row, and he invites her to a counseling group for families of death row inmates. She goes, but she is not into it because the therapist is preaching, like, acceptance, and she very much does not accept her brother's impending death.
She's not in that place.
No. And then, like, this group of guys interrupts this counseling session because they're showing up to play basketball, and they're, like, really rude and violent for, like, no reason. And Satya's not impressed by this, so she sits down and refuses to leave. And then, like, one of the guys walks up to her just casually holding a switchblade. Not even like he knows how to use it. It's just kind of, like, in his hand.
Yeah, he clearly doesn't know how to use it.
Yeah. And then he, like, gets in her face with it, and she just flips it so that he ends up cutting himself.
Yeah.
This guy starts screaming, and his friends try to rush her, only for Bhatia to pull a gun.
Yeah.
And it's just like, what? But it's okay because the gun's not loaded. So he just carries around an empty gun.
I just love all the moments where he, like, points the gun at people and people are like, no. And he's like, oh, don't worry, it's not loaded.
Yeah. And Bhatia reveals that he used to have a gang.
Yeah.
That's convenient. Satya and the whole counseling group go out for drinks. And Bhatia says that they should plan a jailbreak. And Satya doesn't think at all before she's just like, done. Like, let's go. Let's do it.
Yeah.
Then it turns out that one of the other group members is a retired cop. This is Mutu. And he tells them that they're talking nonsense because the jail is impenetrable. At their first planning meeting, Satya and Bhatia sit in silence as they eat. And Satya prompts Bhatia to share his plan because she's trusting his expertise. But he's retired and he doesn't have a plan. This felt so... I did appreciate this because I'm like, this is what would happen in real life if two people were like, yeah, jailbreak, let's go.
Yeah. And then, then they'd be like, do you know how?
Yeah, like, okay, where do we start?
But I also like that Bhatia, like, clearly he's been wanting to do this for a while, but yes. He was just like, he needed another slightly crazy person to roll up. Yeah. And he was like, finally.
he needed a Satya.
He really did. Yeah.
Yeah. And so Satya decides that the first thing they need to do is learn the story of the retired cop Mutu. Mm-hmm. Bhatia shares with her that Mutu is originally from India, but he moved to Han Shi Dao and became a police officer. One day, he arrested a child for stealing, only to learn that the child was innocent. But he was too late, and the child received the death penalty. Mutu quit his job as an officer to try to get the child out, and that's what he's still doing today. So mm-hmm. He's not even related to this guy. He just wants to help him. He wants to do right by him.
Yeah.
So Satya tracks Mutu down out in the market and begs him to help her and Bhatia. Mutu says no, and she needs to stop this nonsense or he'll report her to the authorities. Because he has a moral compass, we come to.
Yeah.
She says, okay, then I'll just kill you. And she reveals that she knows karate. She's a yellow belt. And they start fighting. Everything exposes new depths to Satya. And it's like, you're kind of like, oh, she's like, oh, I'll just kill you then. And it's like, are you serious?
Like, will you though? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that was one of the things that I thought was so great about Alia Bhatt's performance was like, you didn't ever know. Didn't ever know whether she was kidding or whether she was serious. And like, she almost does kill him.
Yeah. Yeah, because they start fighting, and Satya says if she wins, Mutu joins her team. Because there's also this element of playfulness in the sense that it's like, oh, well, if I win, you do this. And if I lose, like, whatever, it's fine. Yeah, but it's not playful.
But it's deadly.
Yeah, and he ends up knocking her down. And as he does, he gets a text message saying that the execution date has been set for the boy he imprisoned. This distracts him, and Sadia is able to jump on Mutu's back. She ends up choking him out, but he's okay. She buys him a beer to make up for it. And Mutu decides to join her and Bhatia in their jailbreak planning.
I mean, yeah.
Yeah. So they all start planning, and they decide that their escape route will be through the kitchen, and they'll need to do it right after dinner. Once they're free, they'll get on a boat and head into Malaysian waters. Luckily, Mutu has a friend who is a member of the Malaysian Coast Guard, and Mutu can convince him to help them. And having worked out this whole plan, the trio works on getting the boys put on kitchen duty. Bhatia will then explain the plan to his son so he can pass it along to the others. Satya goes to visit Ankur, and she notices that he seems a bit off, so she asks him if anyone's been bothering him. We then get a flashback to 25 days ago, when Landa used a flimsy excuse to punish Ankur, and he also got his friend to do the punishing. So yeah. Ankur ends up getting whipped with, like, salty cane. Like, it bad. Not good.
This is where it's like, I thought you guys were about, like, counseling and rehabilitation. Like, what's with this?
But yeah, so that kind of brought Ankur's morale down, which I think is understandable. But we do get another flashback to Ankur talking to the prisoner who flogged him. And that guy tells him Ankur will not die here because he's planning a jailbreak. And he's now going to include Ankur because he told him he owed him one.
Mm-hmm.
He tells Ankur that their way out is an old toilet in the infirmary. And whenever one of his crew volunteers in the infirmary, they work on digging the tunnel.
Yeah.
This new friend then tells Ankur that he'll get him put on infirmary duty. And once the tunnel is ready, they'll use it to escape out to the main sewers of the city, then make it to a boat and escape. And this is where I really started to get stressed because I was like, uh-oh, we have two different plans happening.
Yeah.
And they're not going to work well with each other.
No, so and I was getting like excited about it because I was like, this is so interesting. And yeah. I'll be honest, like, this is something I have thought about before, where like in a prison break movie where I'm like, what if someone were planning something to break different. You out at the same time as you're planning to, like, what would you do? How would it work? And I was I'm so excited to get to see that play out. But then that wasn't actually
happened. Do it.
No.
Shortly after this visit, one of Ankur's friends, who was like one of the ones planning the escape, gets electrocuted. And he hadn't told anyone his execution date, so this comes as a really sad surprise to them all.
Yeah.
And so the head of the group says, all right, enough's enough. We'll get out of here in 15 days. And this is when we see that it's like, okay, Mutu, Satya, and Bhatia are also planning to enact their plan on the same timeline. Because that'll be the day of the Hungry Ghost Festival, which sounds really fun.
Sounds very cool, yeah.
Yeah. When most cops have the day off and there are really big crowds. That feels like a terrible combo for any, like, city, but...
Yeah. You should probably have some kind of security around.
Whatever. Ankur and his friends then learn that Ankur and Bhatia's son Tony have been put on kitchen duty. Because Bhatia has had his hand in things. But this goes against their plan to work in the infirmary. But Bhatia then writes in code to his son and passes it along a chain of people and guards until it gets to Tony in his little dinner roll. It's rolled up. We don't see what happens with Tony, but we do see Bhatia go to the prison for a scheduled visit with him, only to be told that his visit has been canceled because Tony is in the medical ward.
Mm-hmm.
Ugh. Bhatia starts panicking, and the guards escort him out. We then see a flashback to 2 days ago when the head planner at the prison told the boys that since they can't work in the infirmary, they have to go there as patients. So they all mix detergent pods into their food so that they start vomiting, and they get brought to the infirmary. So Tony does not find the message from Batya. And this made me really sad and, like, upset. Just, yeah.
Yeah, and also, like, this is a bad plan. Like, this looks really suspicious. Like, everyone knows that you guys are a crew. And if you're all sick at the same time, it's going to look really weird.
Right. Yeah.
Unless you were, like, making out with each other and got norovirus, which I guess could have happened. But, like, you know.
Yeah, but it is, it's like, one of those things where it's like, oh, God, if only there's just ships in the night. If only hadn't enacted this new plan, like, the very same night that, like, Tony would have found the message. Also, just, like, the whole detergent pods thing, I'm like, don't do it. Those actually can kill you.
They can, yeah. And I'm
like, how does the leader know? He's like, you'll feel like you're dying, but you're going to be fine.
Maybe he partook in the Tide Pod challenge back in the day.
God, yeah. Oh, jeez. But so Mutu hears that the boys have been admitted to the infirmary from his contact within the prison, and he tells the others. Mutu says they have no choice other than to abort the plan. So on the night of the Hungry Ghost Festival, the jailbreak boys sneak out of the infirmary and start to crawl through the tunnel. And as they're doing that, Landa realizes something's up, so he goes to investigate, and he discovers that the prisoners have escaped. So he notifies everyone, which means that all of the cops that were wandering around the city for the holiday are now on the lookout. And they, like, these boys don't have a change of clothes. Like, they're just straight up in their prison uniforms.
Yeah.
That was, like, a gross oversight. I was like, you're going to be so easy to spot.
They just, like, emerge from the sewers in their prison uniforms and are just like, hey!
Yeah, and then they're just, like, standing there like, oh, my God, we're free. And I'm like, this is not going to end well.
Yeah. I also, just real quick, I liked that there was, it turned out that there was, like, a whole, like, romance thing between one of the guards.
Oh, yeah, that was,
And she also probably died.
Oh, yeah, I did have that thought. I was like, well, she's probably dead. Also, the whole thing, like, where she's like, I love you, and he's like, I know.
I know, I was like, okay,
were you
Han
just
Solo.
Using her? Like, is this supposed to be a romantic thing? Or were you genuinely using her? Because, like, she's probably going to be sad that, spoiler alert, that guy's not around anymore.
No.
I don't know. But, yeah, so the morning after the festival, police knock at Satya's door and hand her a letter notifying her that Ankur's execution date has been moved up to early the following morning due to his attempted escape, which led to the death of another inmate and a police officer. The head prisoner ended up killing a cop, but then got shot by Landa. So the night before the execution, Satya, Batya, and Mutu are grieving until Satya has an idea. She asks where the prison gets its electricity. Because without electricity, they have no power and none of the security or locks will work. Which I also like this whole element of it because it's like, you think you're super high tech with your super high tech prison. And it's like, and then it's like, actually, you would have been better served with like old fashioned locks and doors.
Yeah, good old fashioned lock and key. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, I was going to be like an Azkaban, but I mean Alcatraz.
I think Azkaban maybe threw some magic in there. And Alcatraz, you know, was mostly just the ghosts were people keeping people in there.
That's
in their
so place. True. They didn't even need guards. Mutu explains that the prison does have backup generators, but Satya says they'll shut down the backup generators and then the main one. And you know what? This is actually not a bad plan.
It's really not.
I thought they were going to explain it a bit better and or just do it with more finesse, but it's fine.
I agree.
So Mutu pushes back on this plan, saying that that will release all 6,000 prisoners, which is very different than saving 3 innocent lives. True.
Yeah.
Mutu won't allow Satya to do this, and Satya says it might be wrong, but she never claimed to be ethical. Also true.
Yeah.
She tells Mutu that he doesn't have to be part of her plan, but he can't get in her way. So Mutu walks away. Satya then tells Batya that they'll use fire to enact their plan.
She's going to Agni Pot this biatch.
She is going to Agni Pot. Path of fire.
Path of fire.
Ring of fire.
We got to watch Agni Pot.
We really have to watch Agni Pot. We should actually put that on the list for this upcoming time.
You know, we should start an actual list.
Yeah, because we kind of just say things and then it doesn't come back. Similar to this movie. Yeah. We get a montage of Batia working with his people, because he's got a whole group of people now working for him again, to get things set up for Satya, including a fake police vehicle and what looks like a flamethrower. Or is that the grappling gun? Because there is, like, not a grappling gun, a grappling hook gun. Because there's a lot of stuff going on.
Yeah.
And then this plan is in motion. What's the exact plan? Hell if I know. I just wish that, yeah, it was a little more clear.
Yeah.
But whatever. They stage an accident to distract the petrol truck drivers that are on their way to refuel the backup generators. And Batia's guys pour some sort of liquid into the trucks. Satya lets Batia know that their plan has been successful, but as she's riding her scooter back, Muntu rides up behind her. How did he know where they'd be? Maybe he was just lying in wait watching the backup generators. I don't know.
That's true, because he did hear that part of the plan. That's a good thought.
That's true. And he tells her he has to do his duty, and then he calls one of the prison guards. No. What he should have done was make the call and then confront her. But he didn't. And before he can say anything to the guy on the other end of the call, Satya runs him off the road. By the way, I'm still here for it at this moment. I'm still like, okay, like, yeah, she told you not to get in her way.
The movie had started to lose me at the, like, I found myself kind of grasping at straws.
Well, it's the whole fire. Yeah.
And
so Satya, runs him off the road, and then they both fall down a hill, and then they immediately start fighting. And then they end up, like, falling off a cliff?
They do, yes.
I was like, what's going to happen here as they're flying, like, slow motion through the air? I was like, this is fascinating. What?
Yeah.
Satya survives, and this is the really bonkers part. She survives because she hit a tree?
Mm-hmm.
But
yeah.
Muntu lands on the ground, and he's dead. So she didn't technically kill him.
But she was... she was actively involved in his death. I did have the thought, though, that, like, this worked out well for Muntu in a sense, because, like, he got to die knowing he tried to stop this plan.
That is true.
And also knowing that probably Satya was going to get his guy out because she's a dang superhero. So
yeah, that is so true. So
he got to die peacefully.
As peacefully as you can die when you're flying off a cliff and hitting the ground below. Yeah. But yeah, meanwhile, the tampered with trucks arrive at the generators, and then we see Satya, who passed out a bit because of, like, the pain. She wakes up in the woods as it's getting dark, and she manages to get home somehow. And shortly before the boys are due to be electrocuted, Batia cues the engineer to cut the power to the city. And this engineer, like, does what he says because Batia's men kidnapped his wife and child. That was a very quick flash of scene that I was like, is that what I think it is? And apparently, so all the lights in the city go out, but the prison's electricity is still on. Satya says they need to crash the generator. They just are just like, how many trucks do they have and how much gasoline do they have? Apparently a ton.
A lot.
Yeah, because they load up 3 bulletproof trucks with propane and then drive them remotely straight into the generator. So there's just a massive explosion. In the prison, Landa has the 3 boys in the execution room. He talks at them for a bit. Blah, 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 blah. And then he puts Ankur in the chair. And just as he pulls the lever to electrocute the chair, the trucks crash into the prison's generator, causing a blackout. The prisoners' cell doors open, and all the prisoners start running around. And then all the guards are running around, too. And it's just complete chaos. And while the guards in the execution room are distracted, the other 2 boys free Ankur from the chair. So now we got the 3 boys. They're loose. They're not too loose. They're still in the electrocution room.
They are.
A bunch of the guards elsewhere in the prison are trying to get in touch with Landa in the execution room, but he's like, I'm carrying out my final execution and I'll talk to you after. And there was kind of a moment where I thought, as he was ignoring the messages coming through, I was like, I think maybe he's kind of having like a moral dilemma, or maybe he's like thinking about like, how do I handle this? How do I wrestle with? I don't think so.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
I don't think so either. And one, I don't understand why he said it was his final execution. Because when he said that, I was like, is he going to like kill himself?
It kind of felt that way. I was very confused by his whole thing.
And another thing I wanted to say about Landa. He has this whole routine that they go to the trouble of showing us of, like, clearly the way that he has to, like, get himself through the horrible experience of executing other human beings. He, like, has this whole routine that, like, he, like, does before going into it. And I was like, that is really fascinating. And I was like, this is a really interesting character that they're creating. And then all of a sudden he was just pure evil.
Yeah.
And, like certainly there were things he did...
wanting to kill him. But it goes from like being morally gray, where it's like, okay, maybe we could believe that your profession turned you into this, to just like, you want to murder these three boys.
Or even just like, he was so like by the book, and he was like, you know, it's not necessarily that I like this, but it's my job and I have to do it, and I'm going to do it in ways that get results. And then all of a sudden, he's just like, oh yeah, no, I'm just going to kill them. Like they need to die and I'm going to kill them. And it was just like, what happened?
There are multiple unhinged people in this film. It's not just Satya.
That's very true.
Because also the wildest thing is, you're right, like by the book, and he's like, oh, I promise never to use a firearm in this room to like honor the sanctity of this. So he starts fighting the three boys in like hand-to-hand combat.
Yeah.
Which is a time. meanwhile, Satya drives another truck straight into the middle of the compound, and there's some fires and mini explosions, and she gets on top of the truck and is like, long live the revolution! Because I have to believe that the whole reason that they even, like, put that in the plot is so that she could say that.
Right, just to, like, stir everybody up.
Yeah.
Which is just, like, it's just kind of, like, a useless, I don't know. It's just, it's a moment that doesn't mean anything.
Yeah. So everyone starts fighting. I mean, they were kind of fighting before, but now they're like, revolution! And I'm like, if I were in a sketchy island prison, I don't think I'd waste time fighting guards. I think I would just run.
Yeah. Like, well, and also, like, prisons have systems in place for, like, this kind of thing. You know, and I guess, okay, they knocked out the power, but, like, I don't know. I just think it would be harder than this.
I agree. Well, and clearly it looks like, backup is called. Like, it feels like there's, like, SWAT teams that show up. Yeah. And, like,
They like call it like the army. It's like,
I don't know. Think you would stop like trying to destroy everything, and I think you'd pretty quickly be like, let me just try to run home.
Let me just try to get away.
But anyway, in the midst of this fighting, Satya straight up shoots a grappling hook gun and ascends up the side of a building. It's very cool. And she runs along the roof to the soul door, which is like the skylight leading into the execution room, because they open it so the soul can escape from the person who's getting executed. But it's closed. So Satya finally ends up breaking the glass of a skylight in one of the other rooms in that same building and dropping into it that way. And as she does that, the boys actually succeed in getting the soul door open and escaping the execution room that way. So they do a little switcheroo. So now Satya's inside the building amidst all the fighting, and the three boys are still fighting Landa on the roof. And in an absolutely bonkers move, which I didn't really see, I don't think they showed us how he managed this, but he gets all three boys subdued and he is choking out all of them. He's got one under his boot and the other two under his arms. And I'm like, there were three of you. How did this happen?
This is how you know that Ankur is not also a yellow belt in karate like his sister.
See, well, that's true. And that's why if you're a super protective older sister, you really should give your little brother some karate lessons.
sometimes you do have to let people fight their own battles, yeah, so that they can do it in important moments.
Mm-hmm. But lesson learned, I guess.
Yeah.
But it's cool because at that moment, Satya appears behind Landa and she shoots him with a smoke grenade.
She does.
So that's going to leave a mark. Because that knocks him out and she's able to run to Ankur and hug him. Yay. They're reunited.
Yeah.
So the boys are okay and Satya leads them as they run across the rooftops from more guards with guns. And they run into a building, they lock the door behind them, but then the door that they're heading for is locked, and the guards are able to break in after them. So it seems all hope is lost, and they're going to get recaptured, until Bhatia drives a bulletproof van through the door that they were trying to open.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, scratch that. It's just a van. It's not bulletproof. We'll find that out shortly. They wasted all their bulletproof things on all the trucks that went boom.
All the things that they just, that no one was driving and they just needed to blow up.
Yeah, it makes zero sense. But so he drives this van through the door they were trying to open and they fling themselves inside and Bhatia speeds away from the prison, chased by multiple police cars. And then Satya notices that Bhatia's hand is bloody and there's a bullet hole in the van's windshield. Mm-hmm. And she climbs up front with him and she sees that he's been shot in the stomach. That's not good. That will kill you.
slowly. We discussed at length.
We have discussed that before. And I'm happy that it actually is slow in this movie because that feels more realistic. And Bhatia says that the cops will chase them until the docks, so their only option is for Bhatia to distract them as the others escape. So they pull into an alley, and Bhatia says goodbye to his son, Tony. It's very emotional. And then Satya and the boys get out of the van to escape to their getaway car. A bunch of cops start shooting at the van, so Bhatia backs up at speed and crashes into them. And I think there's, like, an explosion. He's dead. He dead. Yeah. That's a wrap on Bhatia.
He dead.
He's a legend. He went out with a bang.
He did. Yeah. Literally and figuratively, maybe. We don't know. We don't remember.
No. So the others make it to their getaway car, which they've decorated to look like a police car. Very smart. I liked that touch. They change clothes. I think they change into scrubs because they're pretending to be doctors without borders.
Yep.
And they get away on their boat and head out into international waters. And I was like, okay, here we go. This is the end of it.
Yeah.
It is not.
It's not.
Satya uses the radio to try to contact the other boat in Malaysian waters that's going to help them. But then the power on their boat shorts out because Landa has followed after them and has shot at their boat. Now, I have so many questions about how Landa got there that quickly, how he knew where they were going, like, and now while he's completely unhinged as to just be waving multiple guns around, being like, you will die.
I have all the same questions and none of the answers.
Whatever. They were just determined to make him a villain, so I don't know.
Yeah.
And they're close to the border, but not quite there, and there's nothing Satya can do to save them, so she steps in front of Ankur and prepares to be shot. And this was, like, a very sweet moment, you know?
I was worried that she was gonna die.
Like, I did, I was like, okay, I guess she's gonna die, or maybe they're all gonna, like, maybe that's where this movie ends.
I did wonder if that was where it was going to end,
Yeah, and as Landa raises his guns, he is the one that is shot. Because they did cross into Malaysian waters, and the Malaysian Coast Guard is there. So Landa's dead, and the crew is saved.
Yep.
And Satya and Ankur, like, cry, but also maybe kind of laugh, but mostly cry, because it's a lot. Like, they just went through a lot.
Yeah. I did also feel like this was probably pretty suspicious. Like, if you're, like, the Malaysian people, like, you know, Coast Guard seeing this, you're like, why are you guys so happy that we killed that guy?
Right. And, like, why were you being chased by the police?
Yeah.
But it doesn't matter.
Nope. We're good. We're safe. We made it.
Never question anything. And Satya and Ankur make it back to India, and Satya opens the door to the apartment they shared with their father and their home. And that's the end.
Yeah. Then there's a song with Diljit Dosanjh that Alia Bhatt also is singing in. So that's where the singing comes in that I mentioned at the start of the recording.
That's nice.
Yeah.
But yeah. It was a movie. I do think it would have been fun to see on a big screen.
Yeah, I agree.
Which
with
is what
that.
Our
yeah.
listener had said. Like, you know, yeah, it's a fun experience on a big screen.
It feels so. It really did, like we said, it just went off the rails. Like, I think it was a really good, really compelling movie up to a point, and then it just didn't know what to do with itself.
Yeah. And I think if
but
you're
Alia Bhatt
have...
was amazing for the whole thing.
She was incredible. Like, again, I love a woman who can, like, make you fall in love with her, but also make you terrified that she might murder
right.
you.
Yeah, exactly. Like, that's girl power, baby.
Yeah. Yeah, she's incredible. Like, there's, yeah, the nothing was wrong with the acting at all. And, again, the components of it were really good.
Yeah.
It was just the execution of that final bit. It kind of felt like they ran out of steam.
Or like they had too much steam, but they were pointing it in the yeah. wrong direction.
Too much gas. Too much gas and a flamethrower and a lot of bulletproof trucks that could drive themselves.
It happens sometimes.
Yeah.
So when it comes to research for this week,
I'm very interested.
I'm just going to kind of take you on this whole journey with me.
Mm-hmm.
I started, as we so often do when we don't know what to do, with reading some reviews. And critical reception of the movie is fairly lukewarm, I'd say, which I think is fair.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone obviously praised Alia Bhatt's performance because, you know, they saw the movie. They have eyes. They witnessed
it. She's incredible. But also, was that even in doubt? No.
Right. Yeah. It just further establishes that she can do this kind of thing as well as all the other stuff we knew she could do.
Mm-hmm.
Anupama Chopra, my fave. I was going to say our fave, but I won't
assume. No, you can speak for me. She is my fave.
I just always agree with everything that I've ever heard her say.
Yeah.
But so she wrote in her review that, quote, Alia Bhatt might be small physically, but when she takes down a grown man, we don't question it because her conviction is so absolute.
Agreed. Yeah. I believe it.
She criticized the side characters, though, and notes in particular how while actor Manoj Pawwa does the best with what he's given, Bhatia is largely an excuse for director Vasan Bala to sneak in film references, which is apparently his MO.
Mm.
More on that in a second.
Ooh.
Chopra ends her review saying, quote, by the time Jigra ends, in a blaze of bullets, anything seems possible, which considerably dilutes the impact of the narrative. Still, to see Bhatt running down a roof in slow motion, armed and dangerous, is a thing of beauty.
Yeah.
And other critics said similar things. You know, they noted the moments of brilliance and poetry in the filmmaking, but ultimately that it fell short and fell into chaos.
Mm-hmm.
But so going back to those film references I mentioned before, Chopra notes a few different references to the film Zanjeer, which she says is the film that established Amitabh Bachchan's angry young man persona, clearly also establishing Satya as an angry young woman. Which that was a nice little parallel.
Yeah.
There is also a direct reference to Agnipot. There's a moment where we hear Amitabh speaking dialogue, and it is dialogue from Agnipot.
Oh, the original, though. We wouldn't know.
We wouldn't know. I wouldn't have known from the the Rithik one either.
That's fair. Me neither. I just had the thought, though, it's like, determine someone's age by which Agnipot they know.
I wonder if that's true. Yeah,
I don't know.
Maybe.
We'll have to find out. I'm just a white lady who likes Rithik.
Who was looking for all of the movies he was in and found Agnipot.
Anyway.
But yeah, so that reference obviously feels extremely appropriate. And other films and filmmakers that Bala respects were sprinkled in references to them throughout as well.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a bigger film reference under the surface of Jigra that deserves our particular attention, and that's to the film Gumrah. Now, this is not the Gumrah that we watched for the pod.
Got it. I was like, what?
Yes. This is a 1993 film, Gumrah. And I'm not sure if it was actually acknowledged officially by the filmmakers, but Jigra is essentially an adaptation of this film, Goomra.
Oh, okay.
Now, this movie was directed by Ali Abbat's father, Mahesh Bhatt.
Ah.
And it starred Sanjay Dutt and Sridevi.
Oh, my God.
Also, Anupam Kher was in it, but it was a 90s movie, so obviously he was in it.
Yes. Add it to the list.
I know. The non-existent list that
the
should
The non-existent exist. List that is honestly hundreds of movies long at this point that we don't remember.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no. But so in Goomra, it's Sridevi's character who is imprisoned and Sanjay Dutt's character who gets her out of jail. And Dutt was a previous suitor that she had rejected, not her brother.
Mm, okay.
Obviously, in addition to the plots of these movies being similar, the Bhatt family ties are there as well. So, like, the, you know, Mahesh Bhatt directed Goomra, Ali Abbat not only starred in this movie, but she and her sister Shaheen produced the film. So it's all, those family ties are all there. And also Dharma Productions, Yash and Karan Johar's film production company, mm-hmm. produced both films.
Okay.
So it is fairly obvious then that they're paying homage to this movie that existed in the past, and also came out the year that Alia was born. So I feel like it's all, connects in a nice way. Mm-hmm. But so we'll call that part one of my research. Ooh. Part two of my research was what I had kind of been thinking I would look into when I had no other real ideas, and this kind of fulcrumed mm-hmm. nicely into it, was just learning a little bit more about the Bhatt family.
Mm.
And because, yeah, I you know, they're a Hindi language film dynasty that I don't know much about. You know, we've talked more about some of the other families. I looked more into them.
Mm-hmm.
And the dynasty began with Alia's grandfather, Nanabai Bhatt, who worked as a sound recordist and then a scriptwriter under his brother before striking out on his own as a director and producer.
Okay.
He made over 100 films, so he was pretty prolific.
Yeah, okay.
He also had 9 children with 2 different wives.
That's a lot. That's a lot of big kids. Family. No wonder there's so many Bhatts.
And so Mahesh Bhatt is one of his sons. That's Alia's dad. He also had sons Robin and Mukesh, who work in the industry as screenwriters and producers, respectively.
Mm-hmm.
So then moving on to the next generation, Mahesh Bhatt is also a super prolific director and producer. He is credited with launching the careers of Anupam Kher. Thanks. Thanks for that one. Ashutosh Rana, Bipasha Basu, Sunny Leone, as well as others. Those were just the ones whose we've talked about on the podcast before.
Yes, yeah.
Those were the ones whose names I recognized. And he's also credited as sparking turning points in the careers of Sanjay Dutt, Shraddha Kapoor, and Aditya Roy Kapoor.
Cool.
Now, that was uncredited on Wikipedia, but I thought it sounded cool enough that I would leave it in.
It sounds great. Look, when we say research, we don't really mean, like, fact-checked research, usually. It's kind that of is, just...
Yeah, it's what we find. It's what we vibe with. Now, I did do a little more fact-checking on this next part because it sounded so interesting to me that I needed to find out more. So Mahesh married his first wife, Kiran Bhatt, in 1970. They had 2 children, Pooja and Rahul, both of whom are actors.
Mm-hmm.
He then married Soni Razdan in 1986. And to avoid having to divorce his first wife, the couple converted to Islam.
So wait, so everyone converted to Islam so that he could have a second wife at the same time?
Well, now, I don't know if the first wife needed to convert to Islam.
That's confusing.
Yeah, so I found out a little bit more about this.
Okay.
But so Soni is Alia and Shaheen's mother. Mahesh's first wife was actually Catholic, and so she converted to Hinduism to marry him.
Uh-huh.
They were in love from a young age, but their marriage started to fall apart, ostensibly after a series of Mahesh's films flopped at the box office.
Mm.
This was not helped by the fact that he then started having an affair.
I was wondering if that would be part of it. Mm-hmm.
He started having an affair with a different woman, Parveen Babi. And for a time, he actually left his first wife, Kiran, to be with Parveen.
Okay.
But then he met and fell in love with actress Soni Razdan. They kept their relationship a secret, but then decided they wanted to get married. And so, yeah, he converted to Islam, his mother's religion, so he could have multiple wives.
Okay. I feel like maybe it makes it a little better that it was his mother's religion.
Right. It wasn't like, just
I don't know how I feel about you're just like, yeah, I don't know.
Exploiting a religion for your own.
Look at you, yeah. Henry VIII.
Right. It is a very Henry VIII move. It does also seem like, I don't fully understand, other than maybe like the societal pressure, why he didn't feel like he could just divorce his first wife. It does seem like they kind of continued to live separate lives. It wasn't like they were all living together as like a mixed family. It was like, no, I'm married to this other woman, but I'm also still married legally and religiously to you, but a different religion than I am now.
Right. I wonder, is it because she's Catholic?
Technically, she wasn't Catholic anymore. So even if those she were converted. Her beliefs, it is a truly tangled web. But anyway, Ollie is amazing. After I researched her dad more thoroughly than I thought I would, she is, in addition to being a celebrated actress, she's performed as a playback singer for multiple film soundtracks, the first
that
of which
I
was
did
Highway.
Not. I did not know that. God, yeah. Really, the world needs to bring me Highway this year.
I know.
That's all I'm
somehow.
Asking. Look, that's all I'm asking out of 2025. Like, please just let me be able to watch this Bollywood film. Please.
It's such a simple, small ask. And yet, who knows if the world will give that to you.
Yeah.
But yeah, so she's been doing this for a significant part of her career. She's a philanthropist supporting various causes from animal advocacy to environmental protection to women's health. And she has also started multiple clothing brands, including Ed A Mama, which sustainably produces maternity and children's clothing.
Very cool.
And in 2023, she wrote a children's picture book that is the first in a planned series based on the clothing brand about a young girl with supernatural abilities.
So that's I did not cool. know that, and that's incredible.
Yeah, amazing. That's it. Yeah, so that was my research / gossip for this week.
I love that. That's awesome and is so much better than anything I could have guessed you were going to research. So that makes me very happy.
I'm glad.
You know, whenever you're watching a movie where it's like, oof, okay, prison, death, murder, fire, it's like, are we going to have a bit of a downer?
And I was glad that I had already, I don't remember what the movie was, but the other Prison Break movie we watched last year where I did research about, like, prisons in India.
Oh, right. Anyway. Yeah. Cool. Thanks for sharing.
Oh, sure.
Bollywood Star Watch. Do we have anything?
I have two things.
I have zero, so go for it.
So first of all, I learned about a movie that is already, I think, like making sort of the festival circuits, but isn't available for us to watch yet. But it's a movie called A Nice Indian Boy.
Ooh.
It's starring Karan Soni. Do you know who he... Does that name ring a bell? Not from the Bollywood world, from the Hollywood world?
Oh, no.
He's the guy from Deadpool.
Okay, we have talked about him. Yes. Incredible. Okay.
Yeah, so it's starring him and Jonathan Groff.
What?
Yes. And so from what I understand, like reading the plot and also like I watched a little video about it, Groff's character was adopted by an Indian couple and he was very much like raised in that culture. And then he starts dating Karan Soni's character and it's just sort of like the...
And it's
the
gay.
Interesting relationships. Yes. And so I was like, I think it comes out in theaters in April.
That's
so maybe
incredible.
It will be available for us to watch in June for Pride Month.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That
yeah.
sounds awesome.
I know. It sounds like a really good movie, and I hope we get to watch it someday.
I love Jonathan Groff. You know, he's
I
from
know
my
do.
Neck of the woods. He's from
I
Lancaster, Pennsylvania.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he is.
Yep.
Fun, interesting thing number two is Shah Rukh released a teaser slash promo for the new Netflix series Badass of Bollywood, which is the series that is directed by his son Aryan.
Okay. Yep.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And it's a cute promo. Like, I do, if you didn't see it, I recommend pulling it up. It's fun. It's cheeky.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll just have to see, you know? We'll just have to see what this ends up being. They're keeping, it seems like the details are very secret. So, like, I don't know what this is about. Right, I don't think anybody does other than the people who made it.
You're right. I have to remind myself to, like, almost check my skepticism.
Yeah.
Because I'm like, he deserves the same chance and enthusiasm I give other Nepo babies.
I agree. Yes.
So, let's go. Let's do it.
Yeah. So again, our minds are open. Our minds and our hearts are open.
Yes. Aryan, come on in.
Come join us.
Yeah. Awesome. Pluggables. Follow us on Instagram at Two White Girls Talk Bollywood. I really was hopeful and it didn't happen, but it will. And we'll leave it at that. Also, consider subscribing to us on whatever podcast platform you listen to us on. You could also think about leaving a rating or review. But regardless, thank you so much for listening.
Yes, and join us on YouTube and Spotify, where we keep our Bollywood bangers playlists. And we add the songs that we love from the movies that we watch to those playlists. That hasn't happened at all this year because there haven't really been songs.
Yeah.
But you can still rock out to everything we've been listening to for the past 2 years. And we link those playlists in our episode descriptions, as well as on Instagram when the posts happen. And it's fine when they don't.
Yes.
No one is upset by that.
One person's upset by that, but it's a self...
It's the one who has the most control over whether or not it happens, so...
Yeah, so that's the healthiest way to be, right? So that's fine. Perfect. Mm-hmm. Next episode. I think we've already teased that we were going to watch this, but...
Yes.
We will be watching The Roshans.
Yeah.
Woot woot.
We're watching The Roshans this year, like, right around the same time we watched The Romantics last year. So I guess this
is perfect.
Mid-February is when we go into our documentary era, apparently. <Yes. laughs>
I mean, I am so here for it. Like, I'm so curious about the Roshan family. So
yeah.
I don't really know about any of them other than Hrithik.
Yeah.
Do you remember Hrithik's dog's name?
It was something that we weren't expecting. Mowgli?
Yeah, like,
I think it was Mowgli.
Oh, it's Mowgli. You're right. Oh, my God. You really pulled that out. That was great.
I did. I'm surprised that that came out as quickly as it did.
Amazing. Anyway, maybe we'll learn more things about dogs.
And other things.
And other things. Mm-hmm.
We'll just have to, see what all we learn. But yeah, on IMDb, the plot description is the trials and triumphs of Bollywood's iconic Roshan family, musician Roshan Lal, Nagrat, Rajesh, Rakesh, and Hrithik.
That is the exact synopsis on Netflix, too.
Cool. I'm going to bet that Netflix punctuated it better because this has, like, no punctuation in it, so.
Okay, yeah, Netflix can confirm. Netflix does have punctuation, so.
Great.
Two thumbs up to Netflix for that
one. You'd think they could have just copied and pasted, but.
Yeah. But yeah, it's 4 episodes. We're going to watch them all in one go. Mm-hmm. I don't think I'll be I was like, I hope they don't let me down. I don't think they will.
No. I do think it'll be good to keep in mind that, like The Romantics, this is a movie, like, made by the family.
Yeah. So it's a very specific
lens.
Yes. Yeah.
But that still is going to give us a lot of interesting information about the industry. And maybe will give us even more movies to add to our list.
Probably. But maybe actually, like, an actual list.
Yeah.
Yeah. Awesome. Looking forward to it. This will be good. And until next time, remember, Bollywood doesn't need us.
Nope.
But we need Bollywood.
especially Bollywood big sisters who will just kill so many people to get you out of jail.
Yeah, and apparently, like, a lot of self-driving bulletproof trucks.
Those do seem to come in handy.
In daily life. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.